So we're going to continue Psalms 14, just the first half of the first verse of Psalm 14. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So we've covered so far that the fool is a depraved fool. We have seen through scriptures how there was this one particular person, Nabal, who acted foolishly, who was actually depraved. He returned evil for good to David, and that's in essence what it is. It doesn't realize, it doesn't recognize what good is. And it doesn't recognize God because he's the source of all goodness. And so we've also seen deception. That when the fool says to himself, he's ultimately deceived. He says to himself, he's in such a deception that he says to himself, he continually says to himself, he reminds himself that there is no God. And so depravity, because of its nature, it rejects God and anything that's associated with him. It causes the fool to say that there is no God. Because we've seen last Sunday that there's plenty of evidence in the scriptures that God exists and that everyone knows that God exists. God makes himself known in his creation, even in the conscience of man. Everyone knows that God exists. It's just what they do with that information. In this case, this fool who is depraved, he suppresses that information. He suppresses that truth. He does not want to submit to God. So he is depraved. He is deceived. And that path also leads to disorder or confusion or disruption. And so the fool is self-deceived, not because, like I said, there's a lack of evidence, but because of his wickedness. His heart is a heart of stone, and he does not want to submit to God. Whenever we see God at work, we always see order. Whenever we see God at work, we always see order. What do I mean by that? First example that I want to bring up is creation. When we see creation, when we read of it, all 6 days, there's something that's similar. We read, and it was good. We read that it was good. It was good. There's a pattern to it. He has order to what he does. Everything that the Lord does, there's some kind of an order. Notice that it doesn't say that it was good, and then something else was okay, and then something else was mild, and something else was bad, and he had to refix it or something. He did it, and it was good. Nothing needed to be changed. He has order. And of course, Satan rolls around and he causes chaos to happen. We look at the salvation of mankind, that Christ has come, that hundreds of prophecies have been fulfilled, and all in exact order as they had to be done, as had they had to be fulfilled from Genesis to Revelations. We see order even in the salvation of mankind. But yet Satan tries to disrupt that order still. He tries to ruin that order. So wherever there's Satan involved or sin or wickedness, there's disruption of order. Like we read in the in Jude, like the believers were getting together in their love feasts, and yet these apostates, they would get together amongst them and cause disorder, disruption. And so Satan again tries to disrupt the salvation of mankind. We've seen it in Moses where he tried to kill, or he killed off many babies, almost as if trying to kill off the Messiah that would have been at that time, or perhaps he thought when he tried to kill Moses. And same thing within the New Testament, Herod. He tried to kill off the firstborn there. So Satan tries to disrupt this order. I also want us to take a look at the name that God gave to Israel. What a beautiful name he gave to Israel. If you look at Lamentations 2:15, it calls Israel, the nations who passed by Israel said, the perfection of beauty. the perfection of beauty. The Lord has given her that name. The joy of the whole earth. The perfection of beauty, almost as if there's no beauty that can be added to it. It's perfect. Not a single ounce can be added to make it more beautiful. And again, Satan brought her down from the perfection of beauty to a harlot. So there's this order amongst Satan, amongst those who stand with him, or those who reject God. So whenever we see, or wherever we turn and see our Creator and our Savior at work, there's always order. And that should bring us great comfort. That should bring us comfort that God has created everything and he has order to what he does. Why? Because his working all things in its proper time and its proper order shows that he is supreme, shows that he's powerful, shows that he stands supreme, that he's in control of all things. So no matter what's going on in our lives, what's bringing us down, God is ultimately in control. And he works everything together for the good of those who love him. And so those who stand on the shakable ground of there is no God, they stand with one foot on deceived surface that is about to crumble, that looks like it's a strong, powerful surface, but underneath it's all decayed and eaten up by sin and deception, and the other foot's in the grave. They think themselves to be safe, but death is lying right near next to them. I thought of an ostrich when I thought of that. An ostrich, when it runs from its enemy, perhaps a lion is chasing it, and it thinks it runs away when it sees a hole and it sticks its head inside. And it thinks it's safe. It's gone. The enemy's gone. It's safe. Next thing you know, the lion hops on it and has dinner. And so same thing with those who rely upon this surface that they stand on, that there is no God. They are going to be judged. They are going to be brought to judgment. It is appointed for man to die once and then judgment. Jonathan Edwards preached Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, and the verse he chose from was, "Their foot shall slip in due time." But there are also, in the church, there are people who go to church who are good, devoted churchgoers who read the Bible, but they do not come to the knowledge of saving faith. But they have the heart of a fool. They have this heart of a fool, even though the outside surface wouldn't show it. The fool who said to himself, "There is no God," he professes it to the world. There is no God. He has nothing to hide. He's not ashamed. But there are people in this church who have this same heart, who do not know who God is, but they go to church almost to calm a conscience down, to calm their conscience that I go to church, I'm a good guy, I read the Bible, I'm a good person. But they do not want to submit to God. They don't want to humble themselves to God. And I want to say to them, as Jesus has said, don't fear him who could only destroy the body, but fear him who can destroy both body and soul. We are to approach God in humility, in reverence, in fear. Because he is God. He's not only love. He is a consuming fire. But then there are also people here, which I'll spend the remaining of my time, who are God's children, who are pure, devoted children of God. But sometimes life has them beaten up. They're beaten down, and we act sometimes as if God didn't exist. What do I mean by that? It was Catherine von Bora, that's Martin Luther's wife, who once said to her husband, she dressed up in black, and she came up to him, and she said, "God is dead." And Martin Luther looked at her and said, "What do you mean? He's not dead." And she says, It sure seems like it, that he's dead by the way that you're acting. And Luther had a pope on his neck. He had life-threatening issues that he was running away from. Sure, I could understand why he was a little distressed, why he was a little disappointed. But that should not bring us down, because God is supreme. And then Martin Luther's wife, or he said to his wife later on, he thanked her dearly for that. She brought him out from this pond of despondence, this depression, if you will. Knowing that God is powerful will bring us out of this deception, out of a depression. And later, he even wrote on his desk, "Vivit." Vivit means in Latin, "God lives." So whenever he was brought down, he looks on his desk and he's vivid. He was brought back to life. Why? Because God is powerful. So I want us to remind ourselves, not just of this, that God lives, but I want us to remind ourselves of God's character. When he thought of Vivit, that God lives, he did not just think of God lives. He thought of God's nature, God's attributes, that God is real. He thought of his sovereignty, that he alone is God and there is none like him. That he governs all of life. Not a single hair will fall from my head unless he governs it. God's faithfulness. He thought of his faithfulness, that for even when we are not faithful, he is faithful. And he made a promise to save those who are of the seed. And every one of them shall be saved. So when Martin Luther thought of God lives, he thought of all that. He thought of the mercy of God, the goodness of God, the love of God, the support of God, the consuming fire, the wrath of God. So that's what will deliver us from any kind of depression-like syndromes that we may have. If life has us beat up. The name of God, or the more of God that we have in our hearts, the more of God that's in us, that's in our minds, that's in our hearts, and that is through his word, the more that we have of him, the holier we become, the more Christ-like become. And Stephen Charnock, he said, a holy minister, or even a holy child of God, is an awful weapon in the hands of God, a powerful weapon in the hands of God. So let us have comfort today. Let us have this comfort that God, he is God. That we serve a powerful God. We serve the supreme God. And that he works everything together for the good of those who love him. But then those who do not know him, there's also a warning. Those who do not know him, like I've mentioned, it is appointed for man to die once. And then judgment. And eternity is before our faces. So humble yourself before his presence. Surrender all of your righteousness to him. All of your righteousness, because you have none of your righteousness. And receive unto yourselves Christ's righteousness. That is the pure righteousness. As we've seen the parable of the clothing and the wedding banquet. The man came up with his own clothing, with his own righteousness. He was kicked out. And so let us remember that the Lord, he's the one who is to be our comfort. He's powerful. He's strong to do that. We just need to meditate upon his works. We need to read the Bible, absorb all of those words. Even though the fool says in his heart, there is no God, that shouldn't bring us down at all. Let the Lord bless his word. Amen.